Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Monday, May 17th. We'll start out the week with a great pairing of guests looking at the same thing from different areas of expertise. WNYC Health and Science Editor Sikhan Akpan and Washington Post White House reporter Annie Linsky. Sikhan's new article on Gothamist is called "The COVID Vaccines Could Easily Squash the Pandemic. The Hard Part is Finding the Best Incentives." Annie's latest for the Washington Post is called "The Right Decision Wrongly Handled, Inside the Biden Administration's Abrupt Reversal on Masks." Let's get right to it. Hi, Sikhan. Great to have you back on the show. And Annie, welcome to WNYC.
Hi there.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Sikhan, your article starts with a list of New York Times headlines from the last 2 weeks that you want to critique for a false impression that they might leave when taken together. Want to start right there with us?
Yeah, sure thing. So on May 3rd, the Times published a story about how reaching herd immunity is unlikely in the U.S., citing experts who say reaching the vital threshold would be difficult due to vaccine hesitancy and because, you know, there are all these variants out here that are trying to bypass our immune systems. So, you know, the story went viral, obviously, because it's an issue that concerns a lot of people. And as is common for media outlets, the Times ran a bunch of follow-up stories, most likely to capitalize on the moment. You know, our pathetic herd immunity failure. Why herd immunity is slipping away? What if we can't reach herd immunity? The world may need to learn to live with the virus. So when I spoke to scientists, they pushed back on those headlines for a couple of reasons. Researchers who study health messaging said that it could create a self-fulfilling prophecy, whereby people who are hesitant think that skipping the vaccine is the norm. And virologists pushed back because the latest data actually show that the COVID vaccines can still neutralize the variants and are very highly effective.
Mm-hmm. And to your point, let's not overlook the obvious in this conversation. As a science journalist, and those of you who don't know, there are not many WNYC employees who have PhDs in immunopathology. But as a science journalist, and with these vaccines now in people's arms for as much as 6 months, how would you describe their effectiveness based on what's been revealed?
Yeah, I don't want to be hyperbolic, but it does seem like we hit the scientific jackpot. Relatively speaking, the COVID vaccines appear to be as strong as like the gold standards in medicine. You know, real world studies are showing that Pfizer and Moderna, their effectiveness is in the realm of 90% to 94%, which would put them alongside vaccines for, you know, the measles, mumps, whooping cough, HPV, you know, vaccines that we know can establish herd immunity or community protection, like based off of studies, based off what we've seen happen over the past decades. And then also you look and you see cases and deaths falling pretty much everywhere. There are higher vaccination rates, and it really puts a lot of impetus on us getting vaccinated in order to squash the pandemic.
And before we bring in Annie with the White House correspondent take, your article contains what looks like extremely good news, even better than the way you just described it, in that as Pfizer and Moderna monitor the success of the vaccines over time, at least their vaccines, they seem to be effective at blocking even the so-called double variant from India. What can you tell us about vaccines' effectiveness against the variants?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, a study that came out Friday, it's a preprint, so you know it's been published ahead of peer review, from researchers at New York University. It found that, you know, if you take blood serum from people who've been vaccinated, and then you put it in a dish with these variants, namely the variant from India, you can neutralize it, which is enormous. It's a huge win, because we know it's looking like this variant in particular spreads very fast. It looks like it might even be more transmissible than the UK variant, which is now dominant here.
Annie, your headline is "The Right Decision Wrongly Handled, Inside the Biden Administration's Abrupt Reversal on Masks." And let's document for our listeners that abrupt reversal. Here, is a clip that you cite in your article from CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky. She was testifying last Tuesday before the Senate Health Committee defending the policy of keeping mask mandates in place for vaccinated people under certain circumstances.
While we continue to have community transmission, we must also maintain public health measures we know will prevent the spread of this virus. Mask, hygiene, hand hygiene, and physical distancing.
But then, on Thursday, the CDC announced new guidance that took people by surprise, that fully vaccinated people no longer need to wear masks indoors or out to protect themselves or others. If that was confusing, President Biden hammered it home on Friday with no ambiguity.
Let me repeat, if you are fully vaccinated, you no longer need to wear a mask.
So what changed literally overnight last week to bring about this change? Walensky was asked that question yesterday on NBC's Meet the Press and said,
"So really, just in the last 2 weeks, we've had a lot of evolving science."
So then came the confusion. In places like stores where masked and unmasked people mingle and where there have been mask mandates for everyone's protection, what's the right policy, masks or no masks? Some stores, including Target, first announced that they would keep their masking policy in place for now. Target reversed that just this morning and joined others like Walmart, which quickly removed their national masking policy, Starbucks too, and left it to local health officials to decide. As of this morning, different states, different local officials have different rules. Confused? On Meet the Press yesterday, Dr. Walensky sought to clarify.
Everybody, as we are working towards opening up again, towards the after 16 months getting out of this pandemic, will need to understand what they need to do locally. And this was not permission to shed masks for everybody everywhere. This was really science-driven, individual assessment of your risk.
So, Annie, what actually happened there, and where are we this morning?
Well, the president is expected to speak later today, and I think he'll probably address some of this whiplash that many in the country are feeling. I think what's been sort of very clear over the past few days is that, the CDC's, role and their communication strategy has not been the smoothest process. It was really, I reported with three of my colleagues at the Washington Post last week and into the weekend, and we were really struck to learn that Walensky had made this very sort of groundbreaking decision on Monday afternoon, Monday night, that she had sort of heard what she needed to hear, read what she needed to read in the various new studies that had come out that she referenced in the past 2 weeks, sort of showing the efficacy of vaccinations and the kind of real world experience that vaccinated people had. And so on Monday night, she had decided that she was going to change the CDC's guidance. And so it was quite stunning that on Tuesday, when she was when she was before a Senate committee, she really dug in and doubled down on the status quo and didn't give any hint really that she had made a decision to change that guidance. And I think that is part of where this confusion, at least in Washington and from the White House, laid. I mean, typically when a major 180 degree turn is coming, there's some hint about it, and that it gets people who are paying close attention, it gets them ready for there to be this sort of shift. And so I think, certainly the White House people that we talked to were caught off guard, they were frustrated to have such an abrupt change on, wearing a mask has sort of taken on even a bit of a cultural significance in this country. And so for many people and for many, local leaders, it just sort of undercut this push that they've been making to keep people wearing these masks, because they are quite effective in preventing spread of the virus among unvaccinated people. And, there's a good portion of the country. I think we're still really at about 30% of the country that's fully vaccinated. So there's a good part of the country that is not fully vaccinated, and this guidance does not apply to them. So it's just been a very tricky week, and sort of take, you know, the U.S., the federal government, you know, a country as big as ours, usually change needs to happen very slowly. And this is something that, like, the guidance that came out was just a very abrupt shift. Now, I will say, I mean, you know, there is a big difference. You know, if you want to keep wearing a mask, you're really not going to hurt anybody. It doesn't really seem to make a lot of sense why, if you want to wear one, you shouldn't just keep doing it. You know, so I think there is another sort of social aspect of this. Whereas, you know, in the past, people who were not wearing a mask were potentially providing quite a lot of harm.
Yeah. So you report, based on interviews with 15 people, that when the CDC announced these new guidelines on Thursday, it took the White House by surprise. Now, that much might be good in a way, because it shows the CDC is acting on science, not for the political needs of the White House, like under a certain recent president we don't have to name. But who was surprised by what?
Well, I mean, I think that that's right. I mean, when we were talking to, you know, White House officials, I mean, they were only told... really, it was Wednesday afternoon that this change was coming. I mean, it was a very closely held decision in the CDC. So not many people in the CDC knew about it. But then only a very small people, Jeff Zients, the COVID coordinator, Ron Klain, the White House chief of staff, were told, you know, in the 6 o'clock hour on Wednesday before this, and then the White House then sort of made the official announcement around 2 o'clock on Thursday. But what was also interesting is, you know, Rochelle Walensky, the CDC director, did 2 national interviews after she had told the White House that she was going to make this change. And in these 2 interviews, she did provide some kind of wink that the change was coming, but just was not a lot of a time. The other thing that we were certainly hearing from the White House is they were questioning the CDC and saying, like, you know, asking them, you know, how will it affect this? How will it affect this situation? What about this situation? What about businesses? What about schools? What about, you know, there were a lot of questions that the White House was asking that the CDC wasn't quite ready to answer. And I think that also caused some concern among the White House aides. But, you know, one person described it to us, and we put this in our story, as sort of almost like an overcorrection from Trump, that in the Trump era, there was so much interference and such little adherence and respect for scientists in the scientific process. And now the White House has, you know, gone the complete opposite direction, where it's, you know, we want to be completely hands off, and to where some of the White House spokespeople were sort of spinning to us that, like, well, the you know, the nice, you can, it's almost been proven that we have had no interference, and this isn't a result of pressure because we were so caught off guard. And if we had been pushing them to do it, we would at least have known that it was coming.
Sikhan, Dr. Science Editor, to one of the clips of Dr. Walensky we played there, saying there was new science even in the last week to prompt that further lifting of the masking policy. Was there new science even in the last week that it's clear what it was?
Yeah, I would say, you know, in the past 3 to 4 weeks, there's been a lot of data that's come out to support this idea. So on Friday, the CDC published a story involving a team of researchers from all over the country. It was a really collaborative effort. It was looking at 1,800 healthcare workers, and it found that, yeah, the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines seemed to show 94% effectiveness. You know, I mentioned the study on the variant at the top from NYU that came out on Friday as well. There's also been a bunch of studies showing the effectiveness of the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines against the variant that was first isolated in South Africa. There was one in the New England Journal of Medicine. You know, people are interested in seeing these studies. Just Google science brief, background rationale, and evidence for public health recommendations for fully vaccinated people. That's the CDC's page that has all of this information showing how the vaccines are working in public. And we even have some data on the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. So you have to think that it takes time to collect all of these results. So we're going to have more evidence for the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine since they were authorized first. But yeah, now we have a study from the Mayo Clinic showing that the Johnson & Johnson vaccine seems to be about 76-77% effective out in the real world. So a little bit lower than Pfizer and Moderna, which we would expect from given the clinical trial results, but still good enough to prevent the majority of infections, it looks like. And obviously, all of the vaccines can prevent against severe disease.
And all, I mean, maybe that's the most important part, that all of the vaccines can protect against severe disease. I remember when the Johnson & Johnson studies first came out, and we had all heard 94-95% effective for Pfizer and Moderna, and then, what, 70%-ish effective for Johnson & Johnson? That's not very good. But experts were quick to say, but wait, in the category of ICU admissions and deaths, it was zero, just like with the others.
Exactly. I mean, the bottom line is, you know, we want to keep people out of the hospitals. We want to keep people from dying. You know, the scientist in me wants also to prevent infections as well. I want, you know, the best scenario possible for the public. And we do know that, you know, mild and moderate infections with the virus can lead to things like long COVID, you know, this condition we're seeing where people have fatigue in the long term. So, yeah, the bottom line is just like, let's stop as many infections as we can.
I hear. And that's, I guess, the ultimate standard. Is there any science yet, by the way, on long haul among people who were vaccinated and got initially mild cases?
There are a few. I mean, mainly it's just observations at this point, sort of following patients over time. We know that there's one study that's looked at it and said that about 50% of people suffer from fatigue long term. There are some big studies underway at the National Institutes of Health and also at some other major health organizations overseas that are really trying to pick apart what long COVID is, you know, how serious of a drain is it going to be on the healthcare system long term? How serious of a drain is it going to be on the people who have to deal with it long term? And these are all important questions, and they're going to take some time to answer, just because
it's new.
Yeah, it's new, and our healthcare system struggles with chronic disease. Like, it really struggles to figure out how to handle chronic disease.
So back to Annie Linsky, White House correspondent for The Washington Post. Here's one more clip, Annie, of CDC Director Dr. Walensky from Meet the Press, in which he basically says when it comes to masks now in mixed public places like stores, it's an honor system.
We are asking people to be honest with themselves. If they are vaccinated and they are not wearing a mask, they are safe. If they are not vaccinated and they are not wearing a mask, they are not safe.
And so, Annie, another Washington Post article this weekend by your colleague Marissa Lotti has the headline, "The new mask guideline relies on an honor system. Do we trust each other to make it work?" So what would Dr. Walensky or anyone say to listeners right now who may be thinking, what, are you kidding me? All those Trump supporters out there who are vaccine refusers and rebelled against mask mandates for a year in the first place are going to follow an honor system when they go into Walmart? What's the rationale for why an honor system might work?
Well, first of all, I would say there's a sort of overlap, I think, between people who are not going to get vaccinated and are not going to wear a mask, regardless of what the, public guidance is. But look, I mean, the CDC is putting itself in a role of we are here to give guidance on the science, and this is what the science says. It also may be true that humans, when the kind of social pressure to do something has been removed, are going to act in a different way, and that many humans are just not, we're just sort of human nature does not have people who are sort of light, partially vaccinated or unvaccinated are just going to see this as sort of, a moment to say that the pandemic is over. And I think that it's this will be a very interesting test of our culture and what this year has done, and whether people are willing to just, go for the last few weeks that they should be wearing a mask or not. And I think there is, you know, there is evidence of that living in this sort of like mixed society will be difficult for many people. And I think the tension here is the CDC didn't and doesn't necessarily see that as their job to sort out as much as to provide the White House with clear guidance that this is something that you no longer have to do if you have a if you're fully vaccinated. I mean, the other thing that it brings up is this very tricky political concept that we've struggled with in this country of a vaccine passport or vaccine credentialing. You know, other countries are doing that, you know, to where there is some sort of like, you know, document that's somewhat secure and is, you know, nationally, I don't want to say universally, but within various countries accepted as a proof of vaccination. And that's something that the Biden administration has been very, they've tried to stay very far away from that concept. And that is no doubt because it polls very, very badly, particularly among kind of the independents that the Biden administration looks to when it's trying to figure out how to walk these sort of delicate spots. I mean, I think what it may mean and what, you know, my sources are saying that it may mean is that COVID testing is going to be with us for a very long time.
Yeah. WNYC and Gothamist health and science editor Sikhan Akpan and Annie Linsky, White House reporter for The Washington Post. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.